Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast, covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast. See what the guys have to say on Cougar Board. Find them at 4Mac and CougarCast.
What is up? My name is Keith Schertz, and I am joined today by the 2002?
Yes.
Utah County Daily Herald. Name of the year. You're going to have to explain to your kids one day what the Daily Herald is.
That's true. It's a dying newspaper.
Anyway, Tosh McIntosh, welcome back, man. Good to see you.
Yeah, glad to be back.
So, BYU starts their four-game road trip playing really well. Nice games. Santa Clara, they look particularly good. New, different circumstances worked really nice in that game. And let's talk about that one first since I'm on it. Tyler Haas gets two fouls in the first minute, and I think that's the first time I can remember Tyler Haas getting in foul trouble.
Totally. I mean, it made me worried, but in the end, from the big picture, I think it was a great thing for the team, but it definitely changed the dynamic of the game to have our best player within, like, I think 40 seconds into the game have two fouls.
Right. It's not a new thing for them. Last year, they had to do that several times because Brandon Davies.
It was most games.
But not that he was ever the best guy last year. It was Tyler, but...
But he was the best, he thought, at trying to get steals at the half court.
Oh, he was unbelievable. He could just pick people's pockets.
He knew it.
He did such a good job out there. But let's spend a minute on old Brandon Davies. Found a career in the NBA. Worked himself in. Now, he's on a team that's trying to tank, and he's getting lots of minutes on it, you know.
Because I think it was about a week and a half ago, it passed the point in the season where he's guaranteed his money.
$500,000 richer.
It surprised me. It's made me change. I thought that the NBA was never in his future. I thought Europe, I actually thought he'd be a fringe Europe player. But then he's
I thought he was good enough for Europe. My struggle was to see NBA stuff because, one of the first things I always think about for him was when we had the home game, the Del of a Dagger game. Brandon Davies got zero rebounds against St. Mary's. Their, like, tallest guy was, like, 6'8", and he's, 7 foot tall. So I've thought about that several times. It's like, how the heck did he get zero rebounds in that game?
Getting a little one step further off subject is that it has made me reconsider whether maybe Haas has pro potential. Well, I would before this year, like, before the Davies scenario, I would have said no. But now I'm like, well, if Davies can find a niche, I think Haas is better at what he does than Davies is what he does. So,
I've seen some idiots make the case that Brandon Davies is a better player than Jimmer Fredette because he's found a home in the NBA and has seen, consistent minutes and has worked his way into a rotation his first year in the league.
Well, so much of whether you make it in a lot of things in life, but definitely in basketball in the NBA, is who you work for and your surroundings. Jimmer could not have been in a worse situation, and Davies, I'm happy for him. I don't think he could have found a better situation.
Is it easier to make it in the NBA as a big man or a guard?
I think a big man.
As a big man. There's less of them.
Yeah.
There's less competition. Frank Layton, Jazz legend. You can't coach height. You just can't do it. So I just think that that's partly what's going on there. Not to mention, he's developed a little bit of a jump shot that's fallen for him. So, he's getting confidence. He's playing at that next level, and he's doing well for himself. Happy to see him do it.
He's found the ability to use his post moves against guards, too. Like, that's what I was worried about is how well is his post game going to translate into the NBA. But he's found his opportunities and his spots to use those.
So there it is. So Brandon Davies, 76er, doing well. A question is, of course, will he make a roster next year? We'll see. Remains to be seen. Okay, so getting back on to track. So they go to San Francisco, and they pull off the win against San Francisco. And what was a difficult game, Tosh? They struggled in that game.
Yeah. No, they had to fight for it. And I think that there was a lot of players that I feel like this team's gelling, and the guys are knowing their roles and playing within their roles. And even when yeah.
Are you gelling?
Yeah, I am gelling.
I'm like mud gelling. I'm gelling so much. Okay, so
and our team's gelling, and there was some adversity in that game, but we found a way to win.
Yeah, and I thought that they did a nice job, you know, of limiting one of the things I said that they would need to look out for against San Francisco. San Francisco had a lot of places they could go, right? Everyone on that team, they had like five players that averaged double figures on that team. So that was a difficult game in terms of defense and matching up in that way. And again, you saw, for me, Eric Mika beginning to work his way back in and battling through and dealing with some pain in that game. I thought that was kind of an interesting thing for him. And then that carried over to the Santa Clara game.
And try to hold – well, let's consider injuries included. But do you feel like Eric Mika is as good today as he was the first week of the season?
No.
I don't either. That's my only frustrating thing with this team right now is that I feel like he's not the same Eric Mika on defense or offense that he was 1 week into the season.
Well, so I'll tell you what. That DeAndre Kane – poke to the eyeballs was sort of the beginning of the turn.
He hasn't been.
Well, first of all, I would think that hurt a lot.
Sure.
Right? And then after that, you're recovering from it. Now you got to play with these goggles. And you know, I don't know. Now that the goggles are gone, it's like my eyes could get poked.
Well, there was times against good opponents and bad opponents to start the season where I really felt for large stretches of the game that he was the best player on the court on either team.
Mm. And he's got all the potential out there.
I haven't felt that way in weeks.
It's true. He I don't know if it's a confidence thing because of injuries, right? I mean, that can happen. I don't know if it's because, you know, he played some tougher games and struggled a little bit. I think there was a bit of a overreaction about Eric Mika can't get fouls, that he's going to find himself in a lot of foul trouble, right? And frankly, he hasn't been so bad. I've always thought he does okay staying out of foul trouble. He's not Nate Austin, who there's only six other players nationally that have fouled more than Nate Austin this year. He's seventh in the country in personal fouls. So, but the bottom line is I don't know if he's gotten worse. He certainly isn't dunking it down and looking like kind of the confident, like I'm here to impose my will and and use my physical gifts to fly above the rim. You know, I'm a tall guy that has pretty good vertical, and I'm going to, yeah. And we're not seeing that aggression out.
I think he's banged up. Like
he's clearly banged up.
And yeah. Mentally he doesn't have, but hopefully by the end of the year, because that's the silver lining is that our team's played great lately, and he's not what he could be and will be, in my eyes, to help us finish strong.
And that brings me to one of the thoughts I had on the Santa Clara game. So it was the first time this year against a team that could hold their own against the Y. Santa Clara is not as good as BYU, but they can hold their own. And in that game, one of the things that I noticed was I loved the fact that BYU was able to extend a lead, and they did it in the first half without Hawes on the floor. You know, generally speaking, they've gotten to 10, and then they kind of peter out and then let the other team back in it. They don't. When you can go from 10 and take it to 20, and they got it all the way to 24 in that first half, you can kill a team off, and that's exactly what happened. That game was over at halftime.
Yeah,
because of that stretch, and so that was kind of an important stretch. In fact, it was a 2-minute stretch between like there's 6 minutes left, and they were up by 12, and then by the time there was 4 minutes left, they were up by 24, and I was just like, bang, like that's it, like this is ball game, and so. that was one of the big things for me. So I was sitting at home going, oh, we're really far up. Eric Mika, he's gotten a chance to run and bang a little bit. Okay, good. Sit him.
Yeah, totally.
Let him rest it out. And that's not what happened.
No.
I was a little bit confused at that because you got big games against better teams this week.
And, yeah, and we need him healthy. We need him in order to beat Gonzaga. We need the Mika we saw at the beginning of the year.
Absolutely.
Before we totally move on to looking at this week, though, I want – what's your current analysis of the Matt Carlino situation coming off the bench?
Well, one of the things that's been amazing to me is how he's become a pass-first guard. Now, it's slowly becoming back to the way it was, but he's been a pass-first guard. He's looked for other people, and because it's clear that he's passing and stuff, he's opened up himself to better looks, and so now he's getting to put up better numbers. By being unselfish, more unselfish, it's actually making it so that he has more glamour stats at the end of the game. And so it's one of those things. It's kind of an interesting balance, and I think he's played very well. There's no question. He had a great week this last week. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
No question, right? However, everyone was talking like, oh, Carlino, he's the player of the game. He was incredible against Santa Clara, right? But if you look at it, the guy who had the best game was Kyle Collinsworth.
Yeah, well, he doesn't get any of the dues, I think, because I think he's just so consistent that people don't talk about him really either way.
Yeah, but the guy is like a walking
triple-double.
Walking 12 or 13 points. Seven to eight boards and 4 or 5 assists a game, you know, and he's going to figure out how to cut out some of these turnovers. His free throw shooting's gone up. Everybody on the team is shooting free throws better.
Yeah.
And I just think, I think that benching him, and I talked about this last week, but benching Carlino makes sense because you're putting in a guy in Kyle Collinsworth who's filling the stat sheet better than Carlino did, scoring more points, getting more rebounds, and creating more assists.
And as we've talked about a lot, we're getting a better Carlino.
Absolutely.
Like, minutes-wise, he's playing similar minutes, but that we're getting a lot better Carlino per minute with him coming off the bench, and I think it's totally mental that he doesn't look at himself as the man who needs to carry the team on his back and play hero ball, and, oh, if we need a big bucket, it's got to be on me. I think this has humbled him, and he's realized, hey, my role is just to do what the game plan is.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that bench players will get pulled if they're playing stupid. And so I leave him on the bench. There's a lot – they're starting to get – all of a sudden there became a lot of Carlino fans.
That's been amazing to me. That throwing him on the bench – everyone came to his defense, you know. It was really an interesting.
And to the point that we've won every game he's been on the bench, but all of us, there's still a lot of fans.
And he's part of why we're winning. He's part of why we're winning.
100% agree. I'm not saying that because he's still getting minutes, but I don't think, let's not put him back into the starting role. Let's just keep riding out what's working.
You've got something that's working, you know. We've mixed the cocktail up just right. You know, let's taste that thing and let's get happy tonight.
And I love me some Halford. Like, that guy, he always brings effort.
Well, yeah.
Him diving for loose balls.
That was huge. That was awesome, wasn't it?
Totally. Like, I haven't seen that from anyone else this year.
That was a Jackson Emery move.
Totally.
We haven't seen that from anybody since, well, I guess maybe some people would say Nate Austin in the NIT last year.
It was because he was nowhere near that other guy. He just dives just all out past him.
It was fantastic. I mean, that's selling out, you know, diving in another guy's knees.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he took a beating on that dive, but that's what you got to do. So I thought that they performed really well in that game. I thought that the Santa Clara game was a very complete game. The other thing, too, is you know, when Haas has been on the floor, so just taking out that first half, this is something crazy. Since Kyle Collinsworth has become the starter, Tyler Haas is averaging just under 16 points a half.
That's incredible.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Well, and I know that there was points of this year where there was grumblings among people that are close to Haas. I'm not saying from Haas, but people that are close to Haas that the team, specifically Carlino, wasn't getting him the ball in spots when he needed it. And that's been the one thing that's changed. Now Carlino is getting him the ball in his spots, but Kyle is doing a great job of just feed that guy the rock, but he needs it in his spots.
Yep. The other thing that's nice to see is you see Rose is starting to do some offense-defense substitutions. He's starting to understand his guys a little better.
Yep.
And he's doing the really meticulous style of coaching that you got to do when your team has lost four in a row. He's made the adjustments after losing four straight. Gosh, they lost to Pepperdine, for heaven's sakes. They lost to Pepperdine. They lost to Loyola Marymount. But they've made the adjustments and gone on a nice little run here. And that takes us in to this week. Next game, they're going up to Portland. They're going to play the Pilots up there in Portland. And the last time we were there, Brock Zylstra got punched in the face.
And so are we going to punch someone in the face this time?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
This is for Zylstra.
The one thing that was strange to me about that is that after he got punched in the face, like the entire like Cougar board, Twitter world was like, oh, like that guy's a punk. How dare he punch Zylstra in the face? That whole thing, right? Like really kind of taken up for Brock. And that part was kind of crazy because everybody else, like all these people who are taking up for Brock had just spent the previous like year or 2 years figuratively punching Brock Zylstra in the face with criticism.
No, I think that he was the punching boy for the fans the last several years. I would go as far to say in the last 10, maybe we could even stretch it to 20 years, that I think he's number two on the list of BYU fans attacking their own.
Punching bags.
Yeah. Huh. Number one, Riley Nelson, I think, has got that hands away.
He deserved it.
Yeah.
Would you say, are you just saying players?
Yeah, just players.
Just players.
Real quick, who would you put out? Who else is in that conversation?
Tavernari.
Yeah. I would say Heaps. Even though he was here for a short time, he's top five. I would say he's number three.
Dude, people still take shots at that dude, including me. Right? Yeah. I mean, people still take shots at Heaps. Heaps is up there.
I can't think of anyone else that's in that same conversation.
He might be higher
than Riley. No, I think Riley's higher.
That's true. There were some people who were like loving them some Jake Heaps after that freshman year.
Yep.
Let's round it out, though. We got to come up with one other name. This is the interesting part about football is like, I'll tell you somebody that drove me nuts. This is me personally. Uh-huh. I haven't seen it collectively, but probably my least favorite BYU football player ever, Nate Solberg.
Okay.
You remember him?
No.
He was a quarterback who played with a broken arm who was a was on the track team and was fast. They made it. They put him out there. He's playing with a broken arm. This is like, what is this thing? Like 05, 06, he was a senior.
Okay.
And dude was clearly fast and clearly tough because he played with a broken arm all year. But dude did not understand the principle of angles. Just was the worst. And just dove at legs. Didn't even try to tackle. Dove at legs.
The reason I don't know him is it's probably the year that you got back from your mission a few months before I did. And it was probably that season that I missed that you saw.
Yeah.
Because I have no recollection of who this guy is.
Yeah. Yeah. He even wore, I think he wore 13, number 13. He was the worst.
Anyway, so back to Portland. What are some thoughts?
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing. Like, this is a team that, for me, you wouldn't see anything about this team and go like, oh my gosh. Like, I've only seen them once, right? Watched them once when they beat Gonzaga at home. And when I got a chance to kind of watch them, that was a team, the reason they beat Gonzaga is they played hard. Gonzaga didn't shoot well. Portland rebounded well. And they shot great.
Yeah.
And they still only won... You know, they won by 9 points. So the thing that's interesting to me about Portland is I don't look at any of their guys and feel like, oh, man, like I wish that guy was wearing our jersey. Mm-hmm. You know, he's fantastic. But well coached. They do what they're supposed to do. You know, I don't really feel like any of their players are superstars, so to speak. No one's putting up any numbers that make you, you know, drop your jaw or go, wow. I took a look at some of the advanced stats for these guys and stuff. Nobody's doing anything particularly special. But they're disciplined. They do what they are supposed to do. The coach puts together great game plans. This is a feisty team.
And the fact that they beat Gonzaga, you know, that's concerning. They've also lost to San Fran. They lost to Santa Clara. Mm-hmm. How they beat the Bulldogs is the same way we've lost several games, where they just got up ahead early.
Yeah.
And then it changed the dynamic of the game, right. Gave them. So I think that's the key to this game is, well, we've got to come out strong.
And that's the other thing is when you're an underdog like that, you come out early, you get up early. Now you can just fire threes, and if they keep going, like, you've got nothing to lose, right? Just throw it up there. Let's see what happens. And they were falling for him. And that's the same thing that happened against Pepperdine and Loyola Marymount. So I'm with you. So first 1-10 wins?
Yeah, I think that's true. I was just going to say whoever's winning after the first 5 minutes, which I like our odds there. But if we're down, it just makes – they start having fun. They're at home. It's just, what do we have to lose?
Right. Well, and then especially because there will be a bunch of, you know, LDS members up there in that area who are at the game, who or BYU fans. You know, it's even better to shut up. It's like the actual shut up people in your own building. I think I've mentioned this before. I actually think that works against BYU on these road games in these little gyms.
You think overall? I think there's an element of that. I think overall
it's
still better for us to have.
I'm not saying people shouldn't go see the team. It's their team. Go see them.
Yeah.
Like, go, of course. I'm just saying, like, if I was a player on the other team.
Chip on your shoulder. It
let's
gives
just
you a
say,
huge chip on
let's
your shoulder.
Just say that this is never going to happen in the Marriott Center. But if we're in the Marriott Center and we're playing Gonzaga, and there's more Gonzaga fans there than there are BYU fans.
Yeah.
Don't you take up for your guys even a little bit harder?
And athletes, especially elite athletes, they almost all have something similarly wired in them that they really play well if they feel in any way disrespected or if they've got something to prove. So you might be onto something.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Old Richard Sherman theory right there.
Exactly.
I love Richard Sherman.
You love Richard
I love
Sherman.
Him. I'm a wrestling fan. You don't think I love Richard Sherman? I love that guy.
Yeah, no, there's elements of his quotes. There's some.
He's a Stanford grad, and Crabtree is garbage. I'm with him.
Yeah. He's kind of turned against. He hates Harbaugh. Like, I don't know if Stanford's even proud of him.
Stanford's proud of him.
I don't know.
Stanford's proud of him. I'm proud of him, and I'm Leland Stanford's great grandson.
False, but you married into a Stanford family, so you can grab onto that.
All right, so there we are. Do I think that BYU is going to have a tough game at Portland? Yeah, I do. Right? I mean, what's your sense on that? I mean, final score within 10, plus 10, plus 20. What do you think?
We win by 10. I think right at that moment.
Right on 10.
And I'm not that worried about it. I think we've got our bad losses out of our system. We're playing great as a team. The only concern there is that they, like me, are even looking past this game and just looking
getting ready
Saturday.
For Gonzaga.
Yeah.
I don't think that happens with this team anymore. They've been caught looking past teams, and it's been a problem, right?
Yeah.
So, plus, honestly, if you're Coach Rose, if you want to prove that you're in for a tough game, just show them the tape of Zylstra getting punched in the face. Well, seriously.
Yeah.
It's like, these guys aren't going to lay down for you. You've got to play.
Totally.
So, I think that's where we're at on that. I'm with you. I'll say just under 10-point win. That's what I'll say.
All right.
Okay, let's move on to Gonzaga. Last time we played Gonzaga, they were coming to Provo. They were the number one team in the country. Well, they became the number one team because the number one team lost just before the game started. So they were effectively the number one team in the country. They lost Kelly Olynyk, who I still believe fuels a lot of those personal fouls inside of Bronson Cafusi in football.
I think that was the beginning of the rage we saw in Bronson Cafusi.
I think that's where...
When he plowed him over and then just looked down on him like a football player, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, and so there was a couple moments during the bowl game where I think he got confused and thought somebody was Kelly Olynyk. It's like, is that hair hanging out the back of your... Do you have hair hanging out the back of your helmet? Anyway, Gonzaga, obviously a great team. Mark Few, fantastic coach. this is a team that always has a great system, great set, knows who they are. Mark Few, you know, sets the table for them really nicely, and they always give teams a hard
game. And he recruits really well. It used to be that he'd like get the most out of lesser talented players, but I mean, he's sending guys to the NBA. Like they're a juggernaut.
This is a good team. Last year they lost to Wichita State in the tournament because Wichita State went crazy on threes
and Stockton just stepped out of bounds.
And yeah, that's right.
He thought he needed to inbound a live ball.
Oh no. Anyway, So there's a couple things that you should know about Gonzaga for this game. Obviously, you're probably well acquainted with Kevin Pangos, the Canadian international player who, Tosh, I don't know if you knew this or not, has the opportunity to text back and forth with Steve Nash.
Really? That should help.
They say that all the time during these games. Oh, he's friends with Steve Nash. He's Canadian. Don't you know?
I saw what you did there.
Yeah. So Kevin Pangos, obviously a great player. Really lucky because a guy that likes to kill BYU, the man that Tosh is personally afraid of, is not playing in this game.
Gary Bell Jr.
Ugh.
And that's the other thing that
you should be afraid of him. Shoots 47% for three. He broke his hand just before the new year. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. He'll be out.
And I was at the game when they lost to Wichita State last year. He got hurt, and that's when Wichita State went on the run. I actually think he's, even last year, was a lot more valuable than people realize. And this year, it's big that he's out this game. That being said, I mean, Pangos is awesome. They've still got Stockton, who, he lives in the shadow of his father, but that guy.
He's a decent player.
Yeah.
He's a nice player. He's a nice player.
He plays hard, too. So
Kevin Pangos is struggling, though. He's on a kind of a bad stretch this season. He just came off of a 1-for-11 shooting game. Woo!
That's crazy.
That is crazy for him. So I don't expect that to continue.
Better free throw shooter than Haas, though.
He's a great free throw shooter. The other thing, though, is the guy that he just came back, he's been having back problems. He's been back. He was just named the West Coast Conference Player of the Week this last week, Sam Dower. And that guy's a power forward. He's a problem because he's a tough guy underneath the hoop. He's sort of like a like a Paul Millsap type, if that makes sense. Like maybe slightly undersized, but he plays hard. He's strong. He knows how to rebound. Good scorer.
And the thing that I really like about Few's system is that he gets his bigs to shoot incredible field goal percentages. Mm-hmm. Like last year, Olynyk led the nation by a ways. Dower this year shooting over 60% again.
Yeah, 61%. Their center, you know, Karnowski.
Yeah.
Karnowski shoots 59% from the field. So that's the thing, that Karnowski, we were talking about how you have a guy who's got a little bit of swagger and toughness and all that stuff underneath the hoop. What we used to see, kind of the thing that we said was missing from Eric Mika these days, that Karnowski, he's got it.
Hopefully that brings it out in Mika.
It's the same thing with Olynyk. Like, you know, Olynyk wasn't anything, and then he became a senior and suddenly had all this, like confidence. And
he took a redshirt year in the middle of his career, and then he just came back a beast.
And then he was great.
Yeah.
This Karnowski guy, he got to watch Kelly Olynyk transform into that, and I think, gosh, he's really benefited from that as well. So he seems like a guy that seems tough and will give a great challenge to Eric Mika. Really critical we get a lot of minutes out of Mika, good minutes out of him.
So what do we need? Leading me into that. What do we need to go right for us to win this game?
Well, so you've got to do something to rebound, right? And Sam Dower and Karnowski are going to rebound. So it's going to be important for the guards to continue to rebound as well as they've done. So that's Collinsworth. But there needs to be more of an effort put in to really box out by Mika in particular. I feel like he struggles with finding his guy and putting his body on him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Rebounds that come to Mika are because they're already trying to get back for transition D. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Another thing that and the same goes for Austin, but rebounding is going to be gigantic in this game. The other thing is if BYU can really get into good transition, Gonzaga, every time they've played BYU since we've been in the WCC, slows it down. They take BYU out of what they like to do, and Gonzaga is able to kind of play how they want. You know, if we want to play slow, we'll play slow and we're going to be good. If we want to play fast, we'll play fast. We're going to be good. Like, they seem to have different styles that suit them. BYU has won. I'm not convinced they can play half court. I'm not convinced they can play in any other way other than pretty slick transition. And Few is awesome at taking BYU out of their transition game.
And that's the one that I look to, is that if we can get those guys to go into a running game with us, what gives me hope, this year's Gonzaga team does run more than past teams. Like, they're 24th nationally in scoring. Mm-hmm. But if we can get them to play that style of game, BYU is 4th nationally in scoring. Get them let's turn this into a score fest where we're running and gunning. You know, get their bigs out of their high percentage shots.
And you're right. They do play a lot more transition, but these guys are killers shooting from the field. Outside of David Stockton, anybody else that's played over 100 minutes for this team, over 50% effective field goal shooting percentage.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is a tough game. We're really looking at a lot of things that need to go right for us to pull this out in Spokane.
Winning in Spokane is always difficult. Another thing that can help, you know, Pangos has a turf toe that he plays with and he really struggles with. So I think on a closeout, we should try to step on his foot.
Send Worthington in. You know, maybe Worthington starts, surprisingly, and then just does a foot stomp.
Now, I honestly think if you get him into fast transition and you make him run all over creation and stuff like that, because that's the other thing. You know, he's a good defender. And Pangos, I think he guarded Haas last year. And if you remember, Haas, when we were in Gonzaga, just had a dreadful game.
Yeah, got shut down.
Just completely shut down, taken out of it. That's not going to happen to him this year. I really don't believe that'll happen to him this year.
Yeah, no, I think we've got the guys that are on the court with him. We don't have liabilities on offense this year like I felt like we have past years. So I don't think they're going to be able to game plan around him as much without Halford getting open looks, without Kyle being able to slash. Like that's what gives me hope. This year's team is a lot more balanced, where any one of our players can go off, and that could be Haas just as easily this year.
Yeah, outside of Austin, of all the starters, they can all get 15 points in a game.
Yeah, for right? sure.
And then you have a couple guys that you feel pretty good about off the bench. You know, you could even, you know, you feel good about Carlino's ability to maybe get to 15, right?
Yeah.
And
Winder sure played great lately.
It's Anson Winley the fourth. The combination of those two. They're probably
one of those guys.
They're going to get you 15. Yeah. So listen, as always, with it, beating good teams, and this is one of the things I say all the time to people when they talk to me about BYU, we never seem to beat the really good teams. They're good teams.
Yeah.
Beating good teams is a difficult thing to do.
There's no one out there that always beats the team that they're the underdog against. Like, that's the whole point of...
That's why you're the underdog.
Yeah.
They're good teams. Beating good teams is a difficult thing to do. And I actually think this is a gettable game, Tosh. I don't think it's impossible.
No. And I
actually think you can get this Gonzaga team. They don't look as, if you can't get them this year, it's going to be a long time until you can get them. So, you know what I mean? I just feel like their best shooter is out. And their two best players are banged up with turf toe and a bad back.
And to me, it comes down to free throws. If we can hit free throws on the road, I really like our odds.
Uh-oh.
Just because it's going to – I think it is going to be a fast-paced game, which gives us a chance. But that, you know, they'll – just as the last several games, there's been a – just going to the line like crazy. And we need to – if we can continue to hit free throws like we have been, I like our odds.
All right. Your expectations. How many cutaways are they going to do to John Stockton?
I was going to ask you that question. I'm going to – if he's at the game, there will be at least –
he'll be at the game.
Double digits. I'm going to go 10 plus.
10 plus?
That's a lot. But they show him all the time. Yeah. Like,
the one that made like the least amount of sense – you know, when they like cut to people like Tony Parker, they used to cut to like Evan Longoria like a billion times a
game. Yeah.
And that made some sense. The cutaway so that we can see TJ Fredette was one of the weirdest things that I had ever experienced.
And they would show that a lot.
They went to TJ Fredette all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. All right. Well, it would be, I mean, I guess he did.
He was so far away from a celebrity.
He did jump out at Jimmer while he dribbled down the church basketball hallways when they were dark.
But I think he was well known enough that I think most cameramen don't know who's related to anybody. But he was on the radar enough that I think the cameramen
they
knew.
Just had to show.
Hey, this guy has a connection to Jimmer. Let's show him.
Right. All right. Well, I'm going to go under 10. I'll go 5. Okay. We'll keep a lookout for it. We'll have a friendly bet on that, Frosty or something. All right. So that's what I think. I think to make this game go the right way, you've got to win the rebounding battle, right? You got to be even in turnovers. The other thing is I think let me give you a weird one. 60% of our field goals need to be assisted.
Which that has not been the case like too recently.
Yeah, against San Francisco, they only got 5 assists in the entire game. They were sharing the ball though. It was kind of weird, but they only got 5 in the entire game. That's the lowest amount of assists in a game in the Dave Rose era that resulted in a win. So I
agree. We need to really play team ball. I'm going to kind of change my important stat of the game. Free throws is up there. I think if we hold them to below 40% from threes, I think we win the game.
Ooh,
that's if they're above 40, we lose for sure. I think if they're below 40, we win.
The other one is I would like to see BYU, even though this isn't really what they do. You know, you're playing at Gonzaga. Take some haymakers. Shoot some more threes.
Yeah.
We're one of the lowest in three-point shooting. We don't take very many threes. And
who do you want to take more that's not taking them, though? I agree, but I look at our roster.
Haas.
Yeah. That's,
just step back
I've only
two
got
feet.
Two players. So I've got Haas and then Halford. I'm happy with him shooting.
Haas is 5th nationally in two-point field goals taken. And what's weird about that is all the guys above him are like 7 feet tall. Does that make sense? So yeah. Like he's the king of like kind of the 15. And you know, if you talk to all the Vance Stacks guy, like the worst shot you can take is like an 18 footer or a 15 footer because at that point, just step out and shoot the three. And that's sort of the theory there, I guess. But I think their opportunity to go up there and play. Unfortunately, I don't think they're going to win this game.
What's your prediction of the margin?
Yeah, I just think that things it's just they haven't sorted out everything yet with this team, and there are obvious flaws with this team, namely free throw shooting, namely not executing very well on offense. You know, to win big games, you got to do some half court. And I'm not real thrilled with what we do, you know, from the half court set in the sense that I don't feel like we get the shots we ought to be getting. So I just think that there's going to be deficiencies there. I think that this game gets to, they're going to hang. And then there's going to be 5 minutes left and the Cougs are going to let Gonzaga go on a run. Gonzaga's going to get up like 8 or 10, and that'll probably be it. So I'm guessing with free throws and stuff, it'll probably be like a 12 or 14 point game.
And see, I bet we win.
And really?
And here's my reason.
Listen, if they do that, right, we're going to the airport. We're going to the airport. We're welcoming them back. We're going to bring these princes back
right.
to Provo.
All right. I'm down
because,
for that.
Because here's the thing. 4 straight road wins.
Well, only
after where we were to be first in the conference, these guys are freaking awesome.
If they beat Portland, too.
Like, well, right, right.
Yeah. But I think that's why I pick them is because this week we have a chance to again get back into the tournament. I think we have more to play for. Which I think we're close enough.
Gonzaga's number 23 in RPI, just so you know.
And overall, I mean, they're rated. USA Today has them rated 21 first in the nation. And so I don't think they have as much to play for where we have everything to play for. We're close enough talent-wise that I think that motivation is what takes us over. We win. We're back in the tournament play. And
first place.
Yeah, we're first place in the conference, which we need that. We need If we finish, if we finish in first place, we're in, and we can't rely on the tournament. We've proven that we can't rely on the West Coast Conference tournament.
They can't rely on conference tournaments in general. Yeah. I don't think they've won a conference tournament
2000
since 2001. It was the first year that the Mountain West was
in. And before that, it was 1992. So, like,
yeah.
We won two in the last 21 years, and we've been, like, the favorite in a lot of them.
Well, right. I mean, in 2001, right? Was that like Mikkeli Wesley?
I'm not even sure who was on that team.
Yeah, I'm going to say Mikkeli.
I'm thinking
Travis Hansen, Mikkeli Wesley. That's who it was. And maybe like Kevin Woodbury. Anyway, and then you go back to '92, and that's like Andy Toulson, and I think that was. I think it was Trost. I want to say Gary Trost was the center on that team. He was the best player. Him and Russell Larson were ripping it up.
I was thinking it was Kosich. Or...
that's even further back. Yeah, that's even further back. So, fun fact, though, I don't believe Chesmer Kosich ever won a conference championship. How about that?
So this is the chance for Halford to do something. Kosich was never able to do.
Put Halford's number up above in the rafters if he gets there. Anyway, I don't quote me on the Kosich one, but I'm pretty darn sure. Anyway, we appreciate you listening to CougarCast. Again, party at the airport. I don't even know when they're coming back. Let's just all get together at some point.
Yeah.
And say, welcome back to Provo, you princes. And present them with some L&L. What else do we want to give them?
I mean, maybe some fry sauce, of course.
Oh, some fry sauce. Take them some L&L, some fry sauce, and and some gift cards to Fat Cats.
Yeah. For the Fat Cats that they are.
Oh, they'll just be so thrilled. What fans they have. And then on that day, everyone that's like kind of trying to decide whether or not to commit to BYU, they all do it.
Yep.
Damian Mama, he's in.
I like that.
Tabo Faialuge or whatever, he comes back.
For his fourth transfer.
They're all just like, Fat Cats? Really?
Yeah.
Woo!
This is the week that it all turns. Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope so. I hope you're right. I hope I'm wrong. But should be a lot of fun. Check them out on ESPN2. Enjoy the game. And, of course, you can always get in touch with us, CougarCast@gmail.com, @CougarCast on Twitter. And you can send Tosh a BM.
Hanging out on old Cougar board at 4MAC. So
check him out. A board mail for those of you that
are having other ideas.
Don't leave anything on his porch. Take care.
See ya.